1, 2, 3. Live from the College of Communication, Arts and Sciences at Michigan State University, it is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's current sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a sorry receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shut fake one time.
We talking about practice, not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cat.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
What is up, beautiful people? I want to say happy hump day to you all as we come to you live here on WKAR AM 870. 105.1 FM, January 8th, 2019. I want to start here because it is indeed a bit of a somber day for Michigan State fans everywhere, seeing as though we found out around this morning, it was reported that former Michigan State football coach and, of course, trustee member George Perlis has passed away. Perlis passed away at the age of 85, and there have been tributes coming in throughout the day. I'll read a few here. This is coming from Michigan State University President Samuel L. Stanley Jr., who said, quote, "My heart is with the entire Perlis family. Former trustee George Perlis dedicated most of his life to service to our country and to our university. From the classroom to the playing field and athletic director to trustee, Mr. Perlis embodied what it means to be a Spartan. The university is grateful for his decades of faithful service," end quote. Again, that coming from Michigan State University President Samuel L. Stanley Jr. Also, Board of Trustees Chair Diane Byram had this to say, quote, "This is a sad day for our Spartan family. George's commitment to service and his passion for all things Michigan State are how I will remember him. Whether it was contributing to the success of our football program as head coach, guiding our athletics department to provide the very best for student athletes, or bringing his passion for this university, his alma mater, to the board table, George's impact on this university will be long-lasting. My thoughts and prayers are with his family, his wife Sally, and the rest of the Perlis family during this difficult time." Again, that statement coming from Michigan State Board of Trustees Chair Diane Byram. And also, MSU trustee Brian Masalem also issued a statement today. This is what Masalem had to say. Quote, "George Perlis promised my late mother he would take care of her son and make him a man by the time he left Michigan State University. He gave her son a kick in the rear when he needed it and a hug and advice when he sought it. I will forever cherish the memories I have of Coach Perlis, both as a player and as a colleague on the MSU Board of Trustees, but I will mostly cherish the memories of our annual Christmas Eve family dinner tradition together in Detroit while he ran the Motor City Bowl. My late mother loved to cook for Coach, and he loved her back. George touched so many lives and helped so many people. He was fiercely loyal and never forgot where he came from. I am forever grateful for the impact he has had on my life. My broken heart goes out to Sally, John, Pat, and the Perlis family. We lost a giant today. A man who loved Michigan State University more than anyone could ever imagine. Forever he will be my coach. May he rest in peace. Again, that coming from MSU trustee Brian Masala. So again, if you haven't heard, if you're just now tuning in, George Perlis, former Michigan State football coach and board member, passing away at the age of 85. The first report that I saw about this news, I believe he was the first to report it, Chris Solari of the Detroit Free Press. Throughout this hour, we want to dedicate the show to George Perlis and his legacy and impact here at Michigan State University. If any listeners out there want to pay tribute to Perlis by calling up here on the show and sharing a memory or three, we would love to hear from you. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. And in a matter of minutes, about 9 minutes from now, we will welcome to the hour a former player of Perlis. When Perlis was the head coach of Michigan State football, he is a dear, dear friend of the show. And I actually had to apologize to him because I woke him up this morning with the news that his former coach had passed away. But the great James Moore, former Michigan State fullback, great, who was a part of that 1988 Rose Bowl championship. He will join us here on Current Sports to share his memories of his late coach. And he'll help us put intact the legacy that Perlis now leaves behind. All right, so you can do that as well. Again, pick up the phone and dial 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. You can also weigh in by watching the live stream at facebook.com/WKAR News, and you can just leave a comment or two below that live stream, and I'll do my best to get to your comments throughout this hour. And you can also tweet us for those who are on the Twitter platform. Tweet me directly at Al Martin, WKAR, or tweet the show at WKAR News. But again, the passing of George Perlis, that is the big news in Spartan Nation today. Again, former Michigan State football coach and Michigan State board member. He is a 1960 grad of Michigan State. He returned to his alma mater, actually, in 1982. As the head football coach, he served as the university's athletic director from 1990 to 1992, and he was later elected to the Michigan State Board of Trustees in 2007 and again in 2014. Okay, to less important topics that we will be getting to later on this hour here on WKAR's Current Sports. We will be chatting a bit about the XFL. You know, I promised you guys that conversation on Tuesday's Current Sports. Just some crazy, crazy rules implementations that you don't normally see in your average football game that are intriguing a lot of people. I tell you what, I'm going to tune in a few times to check out how these new rules play out. It's like arcade football, folks. So we'll get to that. I'll also comment on another national honor from Cassius Winston, who had quite the week last week for the Michigan State men's basketball team, and those performances against Illinois and that 30-plus point performance against Michigan on Sunday in both of those wins. And also later on this hour, we may even get to some Pistons talk as well, as the Detroit Pistons, they broke news yesterday concerning superstar and injury-prone forward Blake Griffin, who has had now knee surgery. He has had bad knees for a long time throughout the majority of his career, and this latest surgery looks as though it is going to keep him out of the entirety of this 2019-2020 NBA year. What does that mean for the Detroit Pistons moving forward? We may get to that as well. All right, so a loaded show, a loaded hour. We have Connor Mathis behind the glass, pinch hitting yet again for Alec Rio and Jack Kerwin. Connor, thank you so much, my man. You have been an absolute lifesaver. You know what's next? Here are your current sports quick hit headliners. The U.S. Basketball Writers Association selected Michigan State point guard Cassius Winston as its Oscar Robertson National Player of the Week. Again, these national honors continue to roll in for Winston, who had quite the week last week in college hoops. As the Big Ten Conference Player of the Week, Winston was nominated for the weekly award, which was chosen by a representative of the USBWA Board of Directors from a list of D1 Conference Players of the Week. Winston was also named Naismith Player of the Week after averaging 26.5 points, 7.5 assists, 3 rebounds, and a steal in home victories over Illinois and Michigan. So congratulations to Cassius Winston, who continues to raise eyebrows from those around the nation who don't know about this kid's remarkable game. All right, the Detroit Pistons downed the Cleveland Cavaliers 115-113 despite a classic performance from forward Kevin Love last night. Love scored 30 points, matching his season high. Andre Drummond, Detroit Pistons big man, he finished the game with 23 points and 20 boards, 5 assists, 2 block shots. Yeah, he did work last night. His fifth 2020 game of the year. But you know what was the biggest storyline coming out of last night's Detroit Pistons win? That was what rookie Sekou Doumbouya did to Tristan Thompson. And Sekou, he played great in 33 minutes. He had 15 points, 6 of 9 shooting, including a thunderous dunk over Tristan Thompson.
Sekou with a little show into the lane.
There's a finish for you.
And one.
There's a finish for you. Look at the face. A little step over, too. Did you see it?
I saw it. Look at the face of the bench. And then look at the face of Sekou. That was ferocious.
Yeah, that was ferocious. Sekou was a man last night. Yeah, the rookie was great. Again, 15 points, including that viral dunk. I mean, Tristan Thompson, it looked as though Tristan tried to get under to take a charge, and Sekou just said, buddy, and just kind of cocked the ball back, slammed it down. Tristan fell to the floor. Sekou even gave him a stare down, and the Detroit Pistons bench went insane in the membrane. So that was very cool to watch. And again, as I just mentioned, the Pistons have stated that all-star forward Blake Griffin underwent surgery on Tuesday on that troublesome left knee that caused him to miss 18 games this year. The release did not give a timetable for a possible return, saying that he will undergo an, quote, extended rehabilitation, end quote. But the expectation is that Griffin won't play again this season. And wait till you hear later on, if I get to this later on this hour, wait till you hear how much money Griffin is owed. It just blows my mind. The Pistons medical staff has examined Griffin, and the consensus was that the surgery was needed to deal with the problem that's been an issue since last season. So there you have that. Blake Griffin, a dynamic, dynamic player, without a doubt. But the dude just can't stay healthy. Okay. The Detroit Red Wings, they got a victory last night. A Philip Zadina goal capped a comeback victory as the Winged Wheel used 2 goals from Franz Nielsen to rally to a 4-3 dub last night at LCA. The Wings are 11-30-3, but 3-0 against Montreal this season. Also, how about this? Tom Brady. If you expected the 42-year-old Tom Brady to ride off into retirement after the New England Patriots playoff loss Saturday night, although speculation already is running rampant about where the quarterback will play next season. Now, we did touch on this yesterday, and you heard my thoughts along with Jack Kerwin when I said that after reading Peter King's Monday morning quarterback and hearing what Brady had to say concerning his future, saying that, with the Patriots, I should say, saying that, look, you know, I still want to play. If I'm playing for the Patriots, great. But if I'm playing elsewhere, that's great as well. Hey, I just want to play next season. Again, paraphrasing there. Brady, he is all but put to bed the notion that he's hanging up the cleats for good with that Instagram post today reflecting on the Pats season. Quote, "You don't always win. You can, however, learn from that failure, pick yourself up with great enthusiasm, and place yourself in the arena again." That's what Brady wrote. He also continued to say, quote, "And that's right where you will find me, because I know I still have more to prove." So Brady will be playing football next season. Will it be with the New England Patriots? Who knows? But he'll be playing somewhere. All right, this is a very troubling story. You know, we have been chatting about this for the last 3 years now, about those who attend baseball games, especially here in now 2020, where we are so glued to our smartphones, when we are at concerts, when we are at sporting events of any kind. You're not paying attention to what's happening all the time on the field and the court. And it's why baseball, I don't know why they haven't just made this a mandate across all of Major League Baseball. But some teams have just taken the lead and said, look, we're doing this at our ballpark. I don't know about you. But extending the net all the way down the foul line so that fans are safe from hazardous foul balls that hit wooden bats into the stands, because they have inflicted a lot of injury on a lot of different folks. HBO's Real Sports have done extensive reporting on this and profiled this lack of safety in the game. They even went to Japan and showed how in Japan, they're way ahead of the curve there. In Japan, they've been doing this for years because they don't want anybody injured on their clock. But this is an unfortunate story and unfortunate news I want to pass along to you guys. And sometimes we need unfortunate stories like this to wake us up as a society. A 2-year-old girl who was struck by a foul ball during a Houston Astros game at Minute Maid Park. This precious young girl continues to receive anti-seizure medication 7 months after suffering a brain injury that could leave her at risk of seizures for life. That's what an attorney for her family said. In a report posted yesterday, Richard Midoff, he told the Houston Chronicle that the child's brain injury is permanent. Quote, "She remains subject to seizures and is on medication and will be perhaps for the rest of her life. This may or may not be resolved." End quote. Again, that coming from Richard Midoff, who is an attorney for this young girl's family. Something needs to change, man. Something needs to change. Okay, that does it for your current sports quick hits headliners. Again, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. That is the number to call. The foundational conversation on today's current sports centers on the unfortunate passing of former Michigan State football coach and board member George Perlis, who passed away at the age of 85. In just a moment, we'll be chatting with the great James Moore, who played under Perlis back in the 80s. Now, of course, Moore was a part of that 1988 Rose Bowl championship team. Moore is like family here on Current Sports, and I actually broke that news to him, waking him up this morning. Just a really sad day in Spartan Nation. So you can weigh in by picking up the phone and dialing that number, or you can comment at facebook.com/WKAR News and also tweet me and the show at Al Martin WKAR or at WKAR News. All right, folks, a little along the watchtower, Jimi Hendrix. And you know what? Before I proceed, first off, Connor, thank you so much for pinch hitting and engineering today's current sports. Really appreciate you, brother. I also want to send thoughts and prayers to our troops of our nation. I don't need to sit here and, go on a rant about what's happening here in our beloved country. But thoughts and prayers to all of those who fight for our country. We are talking about a vet on today's current sports who sadly passed away in George Perlis. A lot of people don't know that George Perlis actually served in the Army from 1954 to 1956. He was stationed in Hawaii, where he continued to play football. After returning from active duty, he joined Duffy Doherty's football team at Michigan State as an offensive and defensive tackle in the fall of 1956, and he lettered for the Spartans in 1958. That's before a knee injury ended his playing career. So he got his degree in 1960. He then joined Doherty's staff as a grad assistant. He received his master's in educational administration in 1961, went on to coach high school football in Chicago, and then, return here to Michigan to coach high school football at Grosse Pointe Park, Michigan, where he went like 23-2 in three seasons. Was a very, very talented coach. And then, after a two-year stint as an assistant coach at the University of Dayton, he returned to Michigan State and Doherty staff, coaching the defensive line. And, from there, he went on to coaching the NFL, coaching the defensive line of the Pittsburgh Steelers in 1972. And then he returned to Michigan State, replacing Muddy Waters on December 3rd, 1982, giving the 48-year-old a five-year contract in 3 years as the head coach of the Michigan State football team. So it just shows you, man, Connor, it is such a wild roller coaster ride for those who decide to say that, look, man, I want to coach. I want to be a head coach at a Division I school or in the pros somewhere, because you have to have stints at so many different places to earn your stripes. Look, not everybody is what Sean McVay, right? Where you get a shot when you're like, 2 years old. You have to earn those stripes, and then you end up getting an opportunity, and then boom, it happens for you. And George Perlis is just going through all of the places that he coached before he did get that opportunity here at Michigan State, where he had great success as the head coach of the Michigan State football program. Pretty remarkable stuff. Now, before we welcome James Moore to the show, one of our dear friends and a player under Perlis, I do want you to read a statement, if you will, Connor. You have it behind the glass. Our very own Scott Pohl came in and handed you a statement coming from Michigan State men's basketball coach Tom Izzo. What did Izzo have to say, Connor, if you can read that?
Izzo said, quote, "George Perlis embraced me from the moment I arrived at Michigan State. He showed me what it meant to be a Spartan and how to be loyal. Throughout my career, especially as I was getting started, he was one of the people I consulted on any major decision I had to make. Lupe and I send our deepest condolences to Sally and the entire Perlis family. George is the truest Spartan I have ever met."
Again, thank you, Connor. That coming from Tom Izzo, MSU men's basketball coach. So with that, we now welcome to the hour James Moore. James, I'm sorry. I didn't know. I thought you knew before I gave you the call, but I kind of broke the news to you this morning when you were still wiping the crust out your eyes that your beloved coach, George Perlis, had passed away. Yeah. Just your initial reaction to that news, my man.
Man, you know, it's sad. It's sad. And, you know, I just you know, pray for his family. You know, it's a long battle. It was a long battle, okay? George has been ill, and I just, you know, one thing about George, he had a special place in my heart, man. Very special. And it was tough.
Definitely, James.
He gave me that opportunity. Gave me that opportunity to play Division I football. And it goes deeper than that because I used to be a Pittsburgh Steelers fan because, you know, the Steel Curtain. You know? And that's where George was at. Mm-hmm. Before I got that opportunity. And it just goes to show you, man, nobody's promised tomorrow. You know? It's a process. We live and then we die. And it's a fact that we're all going to be there one day. But he's in a better place now. He's in a better place. He's not suffering. He's not struggling. He's smiling down on us and wanting us all to just have a good time. God dang it, James Moore. You know, I can still hear him yelling at me. You know what I'm saying?
You know, and that's where I want to go next, James. I mean, you being recruited by Perlis and getting to know him, you know, because a lot of times what you hear when an athlete is recruited by a head coach at whatever university, whatever school we're talking about, it becomes many times a father and son kind of relationship, and there's a bond that begins when that coach is recruiting you at the high school level. I mean, you went to Lansing Sexton High School. You're a Lansing Sexton High School Hall of Famer. Can you just take us back to the beginning of that relationship when you first met George, when he first recruited you, and how that relationship grew?
Man, he actually came to the Waverly Sexton game, okay? And, of course, I showed out, okay? I had, like, 332 yards, 4 touchdowns. And he came up and gave me a hug and said, hey, you know what time it is. God dang it, James, you know what you need to come and do, right? All right, let's make that right choice. and it's sad, you know, because it's like you lost a father. It's so true. When you coach, you build those relationships with those kids. One thing about George, what the coaching staff, Coach Saban, Coach Baggett, Coach Belot, Coach Croston, it wasn't like we were just their players. We were their kids. 119 kids on that team back then. All right? 119 people on the staff total. I mean, and they just treat us like their kids. When we need to get our butt kicked, they kick our butt. When we need a hug, when we need a shoulder cry on, they was there. So, you know, it is what it is. It is what it is. And, you know, like I said, he's resting in peace. And, you know, like I said, we'll keep the family in prayer. You know, this too shall pass. The hurt, the pain, we're always going to miss him. But he'll be smiling down on us, talking about you. I better move on.
Definitely.
If you ain't got thick skin, don't go out.
Right. And you know what, James, for you, I want to ask this because, again, you know, one of the biggest moments throughout the tenure of George Perlis as head football coach here at Michigan State was, of course, you guys and what you accomplished in 1988, winning the Rose Bowl championship. When you first walked on this campus as a Michigan State football player. Can you just kind of give us a firsthand account of what it was like? What kind of system did Perlis run while you were a player at Michigan State that allowed it to become as special as it did, where you knew that what Perlis was doing and what he was building here could become something that is recounted for years down the line?
It was a no-nonsense attitude. We're here to work. We're here to put the work in now. And this is how it's going to be. It's my ship, and the ship is going to sail my way. Either you're going to get on and ride with this, sail with it, or you're going to get off and not sail with it. And there's no tolerate. That's the difference now in coaching and in sports raised with our kids nowadays. Back then, they could snatch us up and, you know, grab us around the collar, kick us in the butt, and it wasn't no, you know, running home telling parents. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't none of that. But that was when you needed, like I said, when you needed that kick in the butt, they did it. When you needed that hug, they did it. You needed a shoulder to cry on, they did it. And that's the difference now. We coach like that now, but you got to pick and choose who you coach like that with. But man, like I said, it was just it was tough. It was a blessing for me to be able to be part of that team and be coached by, you know, all the coaches that I've been coached by at Michigan State. Mm-hmm. And it's just sad. It's a sad day for Spartan Nation.
Can you give us a favorite George Perlis story, James?
Wow. Well, I mean, and I said it a little earlier, and no one really knows. You know, one thing about George, and you know, us athletes back in the day, you know, when we win, we go out and party and have a great time, right? Great time. You know, that's been right back when the Outer Limits and the bus stop was kicking out there on campus. I don't even think you know about that one.
I don't. Yeah, I do not.
It used to be a nightclub out there, and and George would always tell us, you know, hey, after a win, man, go out and enjoy the night. 24-hour rule. Enjoy it. But then he would tell you when you lose. God dang it. If you ain't got 6 in, don't go out. Because I don't want to hear no crap in the morning. I don't want to read about none of my players. I don't want none of y'all calling me to come bail you out. God dang it, make good choices. And I always remember that. Always remember that. Because it was real. It's like what you would say to your son. Make good choices.
So true. And James, how did that, you know, after you left Michigan State and didn't return for your final year of eligibility, what was that relationship like between you and Perlis? Did that relationship continue after you left Michigan State?
After I left Michigan State, George, I would always see George. I would, you know, call, touch bases with George. You know, for the first year, year two, it was tough. I didn't stay in contact. You know how when a child and a father, you know, go at it a little bit, they shy away, right?
Mm-hmm.
They shy away. But after the year or two went by and I matured and I really looked back on how he affected my life, you know, I would always see him. We would always see him, and he'd always give me a hug. I'd always hug him. And, you know, I gave him the impression of him all the time, and he just cracked up.
It's pretty spot on, James. You got George Perlis down pretty much to a T. That's a very good impression, my man. And again, if you're just now joining us here on WKAR's Current Sports, we are chatting with the somber news that former Michigan State football coach and former trustee George Perlis passed away. Has passed away at the age of 85. We are chatting with James Moore, former Michigan State fullback, great, who played under George Perlis back in the 1980s. James, before we let you go, my friend, what say you on the legacy that George Perlis leaves behind here at Michigan State? What kind of imprint did he leave here at Michigan State?
Hey, he, you know, like Tom Izzo said, he's impacted everyone's life that he has come in contact with. And there will not be another George Perlis. Okay? He was a one-of-a-kind man, and, you know, I just am honored and grateful to have the opportunity to be coached by him, to be mentored by him. And he will be missed, but we all have another angel now smiling down on us.
Well said. Well said. James, our thoughts and prayers are with you and every one of Perlis's family and friends and those who knew him. Thank you so much for your time, James. As always, my man, I really appreciate it.
No problem, brother. I'll catch up with you soon.
You got it, man.
Thanks, brother.
Again, the great James Moore reflecting there on the life and legacy of George Perlis. Okay, let's hit our first break. When we come back, I'll have a brief postscript on what James just had to say about his former coach. And we also have an interview that our very own Scott Pohl just conducted with a journalist who knew George Perlis. That and more. You are listening to the Wednesday edition of WKAR's Current Sports.
Come around Michigan State, Peter, when he was still.
All right, welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. If you are just now joining us, we have been talking about the passing of George Perlis, former Michigan State football coach and trustee member, also former player. We just talked with James Moore, one of Perlis's many players throughout his tenure as head football coach here at Michigan State. Moore was, of course, a part of the 1988 Rose Bowl championship team. And you can just tell how much Perlis meant to Moore as he got a bit emotional there, just discussing what Perlis meant to him and his legacy and, you know, what it was like being recruited by him and playing for him. So I'm sure many of Perlis's players are feeling the same way that Moore does right now. And what I want to do right now also, our very own Scott Pohl came in and we have this hot off the press. Mark Wilson, he covered sports for TV stations in Lansing and Detroit while George Perlis was MSU's head football coach. He told WKAR Scott Pohl that he'd gotten to know Perlis, quote, before he got the gig.
I knew when he used to come around Michigan State, you know, when he was still with the Steelers and in the Philadelphia Stars thing, and then he got the job after Muddy. I remember it vividly, like it was yesterday. And we were all happy about the idea that he was going to take over. Everybody had the thing with the Steelers and him, and he was, you know, he was a big timer. And it was nice that after Daryl Rogers and Muddy Waters, that George Perlis, you know, was coming in. Muddy was a Spartan, but having George come back was like the prodigal son returns. And, you know, just after 5 years or so, he goes to the Rose Bowl. I mean, there was a lot to like. He was hard to get along with. I mean, at first it was very difficult for a lot of people because I don't think he was a huge media guy. I think he felt like he didn't have the moxie and the chutzpah. But I think over time he learned it, and we clashed. We clashed a lot. But then after a bit of time again, he warmed up, and we had a couple of instances where some things happened, and he took to me, and we kind of, I liked him. We kind of, I wouldn't say we were fast friends, but there were times when I would sit with George and Judd, with Heathcote, and they got along great, and over a drink, you know, it was like a little comedy routine. It was, he showed his, you know, more of his personality, I think, with Judd than I think around anybody else. Ron Mason, too. That group kind of got along really well.
Well, he lived a long life, served the university on the Board of Trustees, not without his controversy, though, both as coach and athletic director and also as a trustee.
You know, he made mistakes. He knows he made mistakes. Muddy Waters once told me, and this is a great line, he said, this is what Muddy said, I'm the cleanest guy in college football, and I break 50 rules a day. And I think that it's very difficult to go through a guy's career who's spent anywhere, especially a decade or longer at a university that didn't make mistakes. George made more maybe than some, less than others. I think there was some regret he had at the end. But I think early on he tried to keep it as clean and as up and up as possible. And I think we see that at the end of his career. It just became more difficult, which is why the change was made in the middle 90s. And then Nick came in, who, of course, worked for George. So he was not without his faults, but he always loved the university, okay? One thing I'll always say about George Perlis, he loved Michigan State. There was never a doubt that he was a Spartan and loved his school.
Mark Wilson, thank you.
So, again, that's our very own Scott Pohl talking with Mark Wilson, who covers sports for TV stations right here in Lansing and Detroit. That's when George Perlis was Michigan State's head football coach. And, you know, you listen to Wilson address Perlis's love for this university. There is no doubt about that. Perlis was a man who loved Michigan State. He, without a doubt, bled green. But again, he wasn't without his faults. And as you also heard in that crosstalk between Wilson and Pohl, hey, you know, Perlis, when he was on the Michigan State Board of Trustees, you know, he in 2006, he ran and won a seat on the board, and he was reelected in 2014. He served from 07 until November of 2018. That's when he resigned, and he cited health reasons due to that resignation. And, you know, that was a time, November of 2018, when he did resign, citing those health concerns. That followed a year in which Michigan State University was going through a lot, including the fallout from the Larry Nassar conviction, the resignation of former Michigan State President Luana K. Simon, and also Athletic Director Mark Hollis, scrutiny into sexual assault allegations surrounding Mark D'Antonio's football program and Tom Izzo's men's basketball program. That was a trying time. And then also a Detroit Free Press investigation found then interim president John Engler helping to wipe out Perlis's nearly $200,000 debt from a gift pledge to the university days after his resignation. So that ended up prompting an investigation by State Attorney General Dana Nessel. So he was without he was a man who had some faults as well. But there is no doubt when you look at the legacy he leaves behind here and what he gave to this university, there is an imprint for sure. So thanks to our very own Scott Pohl for bringing that interview with Mark Wilson to us. And thank you to James Moore. If you would like to call into the show and offer a word about the passing of George Perlis, about his impact, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Go to facebook.com/WKAR News. A few of you have been weighing in on our live stream there. I'll get to a few of those comments And you can also tweet me at Al Martin, WKAR, or the show at WKAR News. And I'll get to a few of your comments on the other side of this final break. You are listening to the Wednesday edition of WKAR's Current Sports. Okay, a little under 15 minutes left here in the hour. We have spent the majority of the show discussing the passing of George Perlis, former Michigan State football coach and trustee member, also former player. A few comments coming in on our Facebook page right now at facebook.com/WKAR News. Ben says, George Perlis put Michigan State on the map as far as football goes. And also Mike comments and says that this is a sad day for Spartan Nation. So, but 85, I tell you what, Connor, man, I hope that I'm blessed to live 85 years on this earth. You know, I had a thought this morning. You know, when you hear news like this, you know, you just start reflecting. It's a very sobering moment in one's life, right? When you hear of a passing of somebody that is around you, or when I have to do a show about an influential person such as Perlis here at Michigan State, you start to think about those who are at or around that age of somebody who passes at 85. And I just had a thought about my grandmother and my grandparents, you know, who are in their 70s. And you know, my grandparents on my mother's side, they're in their 70s right now. And my grandparents on my father's side, my grandfather, he passed away in 2011 due to prostate cancer. That was when I was a junior in college. And my grandmother right now, she is 92 years old. And I just constantly think every single day, man, especially this morning when I got the news about Perlis, just how blessed I am to still have her in my life. So it just, you know, like James said, man, you know, we live and we die, and we only got one life here, man. So appreciate, you know, those who are alive in your life right now while they are alive. Give them a call. Tell them you love them. Give them a hug. Do something nice for them, because tomorrow is indeed never, ever, ever promised. So, okay, with that said, we'll have what? You know, on the less important matters, just less than 10 minutes to talk some sports talk here, Connor. As we close out this Wednesday edition of the show, you know, the XFL, this is something that I was planning to get to on yesterday's Current Sports, but due to time constraints and how Michigan State basketball dominated the hour, I didn't get a chance to. It's very intriguing what the XFL is doing here. It reminds me a lot of what they tried to do in that first run in the early 2000s, as Vince McMahon, who is he the owner or commissioner of the WWE, formerly known as WWF?
I think he's the owner.
Okay.
Owner, and then I think for the bit, he's the commissioner.
Owner and commissioner. He's got like a dual title, doesn't he? Yeah.
Kinda.
I don't know.
It's so fluid with, you know, how much of that is the spectacle and how much of that is the actual business. So I'm really not sure.
Right. I'm not sure either. I do know he's a very rich man. I'll just say that. And he is very instrumental in going at this thing another time, you know, trying to establish a XFL league, a football league. And you know, I just want to read a few of these rules and get your reaction to them, because I'm not going to lie, Connor. I am, at the very least, a little intrigued here. Where I'm just going to say, I'll say this. When the XFL does kick off on, I believe, February 8th, so next month, I am...
I think it's the week after the Super Bowl.
The week after the Super Bowl, right?
I think so.
So I'm at least going to sit on my couch and say, let me see what this looks like. Because here are a few of the significant changes in rules, implementations that they are going to give a go at. A kickoff designed to discourage touchbacks, increase the likelihood of a return. The ball will be kicked from the 30-yard line. The coverage and blocking teams will line up at the receiving team's 35 and 30-yard lines, respectively. Only the kicker and returner can move the ball, can move until the ball is caught, or 3 seconds after it hits the ground. A touchback will be spotted at the 35-yard line, and kicks out of bounds will go to the 45-yard line. So they're trying to shorten the field here to encourage more scoring in hopes of scoring more eyeballs to the television set whenever the XFL is on. What say you about these kickoff rules, man?
I like their special teams rules because the one thing I really miss in the NFL are those kick returns and punt returns. I feel like we don't see them as much.
Yeah.
I remember like kind of growing up in the mid 2000s, there was like a renaissance of like kick and punt returns. You had Devin Hester. You had the Chiefs running back who specialized in it, and then you had like Josh Cribbs, all these guys who literally were just on the team to just catch the ball and run it back.
Yeah,
but you just don't see that as much anymore. So I kind of like their special teams rules. I think it's interesting.
It is interesting, and the fact that once the ball is kicked, only the kicker and the returner can move until the ball is caught. So everybody just has to just freeze while the ball is in the air. And then, boom, as soon as the ball is caught, it's a free-for-all.
I'm fine with that. That seems to be like it'll make it a heck of a lot more interesting than,
Is that safer? I think it's safer, right?
I feel like it's a little bit safer because no one's moving except for the kicker, unless you've got a kicker who is just, crazy fast and can also lower the boom. But, the returner's got
just
it, and
focus.
The returner can kind of figure out what they want to do, figure out where they're going to get hit, kind of plan it out. And, you don't have that full momentum of, all those all the defenders coming at you and on the opposite. And then to protect the defenders, you don't have the full momentum of all the blockers coming
exactly.
up and hitting you. So I suppose it's less time to build up that momentum. So maybe you reduce some of those more dangerous hits.
Exactly. Because a lot of times, some of the big hits that we've seen in football, in the National Football League, is where, the returner, maybe forgets to throw up a hand or thinks that he can squeak out some yards.
Or tries to
catch
the
football.
The last possible second
Now he can just focus on running. He doesn't have to focus and worry about, the timing of catching the ball and maybe getting hit right after I catch it. So, I don't know. We'll see what happens there. Very interesting rules there. Also, players can't leave the line of scrimmage on punts until after the kick. Any kicks that go into the end zone or out of bounds will be marked at the 35-yard line or wherever the ball went out of bounds, whichever is better for the receiving team. The idea is to discourage fair catches and quote-unquote coffin corner kicks while providing more incentive to go for it on fourth down.
See, that's I like that too. And it also, the kind of the little wrinkle there is it encourages your punter to be a lot better. If you can get a punter that can pin it on the one straight up and not using the corner, ooh. I mean, I think that's overall pretty good. I mean, it's going to be a challenge for those punters initially, but I mean, if you get a guy who knows what he's doing and can get it, floating in the air for a bit and have it caught by return, he makes the position at least a little bit more important.
For sure.
Has a little more skill.
I'm curious to see if the NFL steals any of these, depending on how they go for the XFL. I don't know. Three options. I like this a lot. This really got me when I read this one, Connor. Three options after scoring a touchdown. A one-point play from the 2-yard line, a 2-point play from the 3-yard line, or a 3-point play from the 10-yard line. There is no option to kick an extra point. I like that.
I like going for it. The only thing I'll miss is now the kicker who is already on thin ice missing an easy extra point attempt. So I mean, I like their extra point system so far. So what I'm seeing
that's going to be just fun to watch to see how that one plays out.
That's also going to encourage you to have some maybe reinvent the power back again.
Exactly.
Being that close.
Well, check this, man. There can also be a rule, there will also be a rule that allows two forward passes on one play, providing that the first does not go past the line of scrimmage.
See, we can see some creative things there. This is where I was a little disappointed, because when I heard double forward pass, I immediately thought of the game. Have you ever played it's called Carolina football?
No, I have not heard
it's
of
that. It's where you get the, you know, it's like standard football, except when you get the ball, you're a receiver, you have the option to pass it forward, and you keep going down the field, and you can keep going down the field, and it's a lot of fun. And wherever you're tackled is where you're down. It makes the game go by really, really quick, and you get a ton of scoring. When I saw a double forward pass, I'm like, oh, they're allowing like a Carolina football style thing.
But then the line of scrimmage.
But then I see line of scrimmage. Right. I'm like, oh, this is just a glorified flea flicker. Come on.
It is. Exactly.
Come on, exactly. Vince, go a little crazier. Come on.
Right. It is basically a glorified flea. Now, if they took out the line of scrimmage, oh man.
I would be tuned in weekly. It would be a frenzy. It would be awful to be a defender. It might be even a little bit more dangerous, but man, I would tune in every week to see the starting fullback catch like a little dink and then try to send it down the field so he doesn't get smeared.
Exactly, right? And you know what? Also, a few more here, as we have, 120 seconds here left in the show. A requirement for only 1 foot to be in bounds for possession.
Love it.
There will be a total of 9 officials on the field, one of whom will be dedicated solely to spotting the ball to minimize downtime between plays.
There's a novel idea the NFL should use. Have one official designated to one thing, and maybe you don't have people screwing up every single game.
And you know what? XFL head of officiating, guess who it is? Dean Blandino. That was his idea.
Okay, that's better. That's better than Riveron or like, right. Better than Pereira. Because if I had to listen to Pereira on a broadcast,
but Dean is the guy. He's the guy.
It's a little bit better.
One last one here. There are so many, but one last one here.
OT.
Yeah, OT, a shootout style overtime. Each team will get 5 single play possessions from the 5-yard line. If the game is still tied at that point, the rotating possessions will continue until there is a winner. The XFL hopes that overtimes will be rare, in part because of the multiple options for points after touchdowns, eradicating kickoffs. Well, I should say an extra point after you score a touchdown. So, yeah.
Like the overtime rules, too. NFL, please update your overtime rules. It is awful right now.
I like a lot of these rules, man. I'm going to tune in a few times to check out the XFL and see how these rules play out. But your thoughts on the XFL rules, you can comment on our Facebook page or tweet us. Until next time, folks, we are on a 23-hour break. We will see you on the Thursday edition of WKAR's Current Sports. Thanks to James Moore, also our very own Scott Pohl and Mark Wilson. Be easy, people.